Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's me, Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video because that's what he's like. Vilmos still working on the website. He does the Jackie Cation store website. I just had it redone by Promotional Rescue, Melanie VC, but promotionalrescue.com did the new website. Vilmos still does the store website, JackieCationStore.com. All you can go to JackieCation.com and see whatever you'd like. Me doing stand-up, where I'm doing stand-up. Please come out and see live shows. You can see the new special. You can see the new old videos. You can see, you can get merch if you want. There's a Dork Forest t-shirt. There's a new beanie because I have a new joke about bees. And so there'll be a new t-shirt. And for the holidays, you can indeed get yourself t-shirts or hats or anything like that. It is November and December, so I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest. Normally, I say donate to the Dork Forest as much as you'd like. But in November and December, take that money and donate locally to a food bank in your neighborhood. So feedingamerica.org is a way that you can look up your local food bank. You just put your zip code in. You could also Google the words food bank and the name of your town. And that's what I recommend you do globally too. If you're in Australia or Europe or Africa or South America, wherever you are, please. Iceland. I have listeners all over the world, you guys. So Patrick Brady, Mike Rickberg. That's who I forgot. Mike Rickberg wrote and sang the intro song. He will sing the Mexican hat dance at the end of the program. And there's lots of episodes. So feel free to scroll back through dorkforest.com. You could check out my Tumblr account. There is a Facebook group called Dork Forest Rangers. But my Tumblr account has essentially the fan favorites of the shows for the last 18 years. And I don't think it's actually the whole 18 years because the first 3 years were poorly recorded. And so if you go to bandcamp.thedorkforest.com, you can see I curated that first 3 years into 17 of my favorite episodes. There's also a storytelling album on my Bandcamp, and there is just some loose episodes that you can buy for a dollar, I think, that were live. Anyway, a lot of information. Let's get into the show. Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. You're in my garage, Rangers. It's happening. With me, the very gifted stand-up comic Joe Zimmerman, who also opens for Brian Regan on occasion, but has a new comedy hour, like a new video shot by Nate Bargatze. But the stand-up comedy is Joe Zimmerman's, and it's called Cult Classic. Is it out right now on YouTube, or when will
it dropped? It dropped last month. It's out on YouTube.
There we go. Free. And the album will be out free on YouTube. It's called Cult Classic. It's Joe Zimmerman. His Instagram is at Joe Zimmerman Classic. And what you guys could do is go watch it because he's genuinely hilarious. So other than that, I don't know. Do you have a podcast? I forgot to ask. You know how everybody has a podcast.
No podcast. I just, I want to support.
He's just a working man. That's it. He's just doing the art. All right.
I just got my Instagram and my Cult Classic special.
That's it. So now you know. And here, let us talk about how Joe Zimmerman's dorkdom is birds. He's a birder. I know so little about birders. I know even less about birds. Actually, I don't know if I know less about birders or birds. What got you into talk to me about birds, Joe?
Oh, by the way, just real quick, I do want to mention, I think I came on not about 8 years ago and did self-help.
That's right. And I remember that.
And so I'm all fixed. I'm all good on self-help.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'm perfect now.
Finally. One of those books worked. And you are healed. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think I started getting, I'm a new birder. I think I got into bird watching around end of 2020, beginning of 2021, peak pandemic.
Lockdown.
I kept hearing about birds around New York. You hear about these celebrity birds. There was the hot duck, which was the Mandarin duck. Just people thought it was super hot.
Wow. It wasn't Chinese. It had not been prepared by chefs. It was just a really hot looking duck.
It was just a gorgeous duck. And it was just surrounded by paparazzi at all times walking around New York.
Wow.
And then there was the racist bird incident where you heard about the racial bird guy.
No.
You didn't?
Wait a minute. Let's talk about famous birds that really kind of got you interested in birds. There's the hot, a Mandarin duck. That's not a mallard, right? A mallard is the green. I don't know what birds.
There's about 800 different types of ducks, and mallard is the most common in North America.
That's right. That's right. Because that's why I know what it is. Now, a Mandarin duck. I'm not above Googling the word Mandarin duck while we make.
You're gonna look at it and be like, wow, that's a hot, gorgeous duck.
Holy smokes. Wait a minute. You are correct. That is a weird, awesome looking. Wait a minute. And then for some reason, it took me to Etsy. Don't do that. I don't want to buy a duck. Or, this is. So it's a very, very colorful bird.
Yeah. And it's not supposed to end up in New York, but it just ended up in New York City. And
is it the only one?
It was the only one in New York City, yeah.
Well,
right now, that was 2018. Right now, the celebrity bird in New York City is Flocko the eagle owl, which escaped. It escaped the Central Park Zoo. It was a Shawshank Redemption story. It escaped the Central Park Zoo about 10 months ago. After growing up in a zoo for 13 years, it made an escape. And it has just thrived around Central Park, eating all the rats and mice at once.
And what is it called? What kind of bird is it?
It's an eagle owl. It's the only eagle owl that lives in anywhere in America right now. And and his name was Flocko growing up in the zoo.
Oh, there we go. There we go. An eagle owl. Flocko the owl, June of 2023. Let's see the images. It looks like an owl. Actually, it's got kind of a fuzzy ears.
Yeah. The recent gossip on Flocko is they're no longer trying to capture him because they're like, I guess he's going to do okay on his own. And then the latest gossip is he's been hooting a little louder the last few weeks. And they think he's starting to look for a lover.
Yes, to mate. So will there be a hybrid owl that will come of this?
Well,
one would imagine.
Yeah, there's good and bad news. The bad news is obviously no other eagle owls anywhere nearby. The good news is apparently great horned owls are close enough relatives, and there are some great horned owls around Central Park, so there's a chance he could mate with a great horned owl.
Okay, so he could find a friend. Where are they native to?
The Eurasian eagle owl, I guess. Yeah. Somewhere in Eurasia.
Right. That's a European Asian owl. It's interesting that birds and animals are native to one area, and I guess we're the ones that keep bringing them places.
Yes.
And then they get out. Like here in Los Angeles, there are many parrots, but not big parrots, but little parakeets, to sort of small parrots. And I'm talking thousands, tens of thousands. They're a pain in the ass because they're loud and they're psyched. And but it's they're not native to here. It's sort of like the palm tree itself, not native to Los Angeles.
Well, this was another big bird news item, is that parrots and parakeets, you know, known for living in the jungle or wherever, are starting to just take off in cities all over the world.
Oh, wow.
So they might be like the way pigeons are now. I mean,
yeah, but better looking, I guess, right? Or more colorful.
Yeah, 100 years from now, it might just be parrots and pigeons.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe parrots and pigeons will. We have crows, different than ravens, correct?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Size wise, I believe a crow still intimidating to someone who walks chihuahuas and chihuahua mixes.
Yeah.
But
still a bad, yes, still a bad omen either way.
Well, I have so many Armenian neighbors. I'm surprised that they have not killed these birds because they're like, we do not need. And I saw those crows attack a car once as a group. They were
for pecking at cars.
Oh, are they?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then,
a friend who recently had crows pecking at her new car. So she Googled how to get rid of them. And what you need to get a fake crow from the internet and act like it's hanging dead nearby. And then all the other crows are like, ah! And they're super upset. They get super upset about the dead crow and they avoid the area.
You have to traumatize the crows and send them to some other neighborhood. Yeah. Well, yesterday we have a lot of feral cats as well. And all of the neighbors like to feed the feral cats. And the crows have decided that they're willing to eat cat kibble. It'll be fine. But yesterday, I saw probably six crows and then two actual seagulls.
Oh, wow.
Eating the cat food. And I was like, well, the world's gone topsy-turvy. Because this is a crossbreed. Will the crows and the seagulls make a black seagull? Make a gray flocked crow? What will happen? I don't know.
I have one dorky thing to hit you with that I wouldn't normally hit you with, except that it's called Dork Forest.
We're here for you, Joe.
So I'm 2 years into birding, and I just learned within the last couple months, some nerd pointed this out to me when I said seagull. They said, you know, there's no such thing as a seagull.
Oh.
And I said, come again?
Yes.
Apparently, there are gulls, and there's many different species of gulls.
Oh, okay. The bird is a gull.
So there's many different species of gulls, and if you want to just clump them all into one bird that flies around the ocean, you just call them seagulls.
Okay. So...
But a birder would be like, well, that's a herring gull.
That's a herring gull.
Or that's ring-beaked gull.
Oh, wow. You are in the know about different kinds of gulls, or at least a couple of them.
But even the nerdiest bird watchers are hesitant to correct you on that one.
Well, it is. I beg to differ. I mean, I do have a podcast called The Dork Forest, and there is nothing more. It's essentially... one of the great things about this show is that there is an opportunity for a pedant to be able to email me at jackie@jackiecation.com and go, you know, let me tell you a little bit more about that. Or that was incorrect. And I love those emails because they quite honestly make me feel alive. I was like, no, I get it. I don't necessarily want to be cornered at a party for hours on end by that person and their information. And if I am cornered, I will just go, we got to wrap it up. But an occasional, I love getting the emails because those are like, oh my God, that's awesome. Because it is usually very interesting because nobody's willing to type more than, you know, four or five paragraphs.
I like that those emails are all just also answers that can be found on Quora, probably.
Sure. Well, they could be. Some people wonder about my, like, am I now a bird dork? And I might be. I mean, I care more about birds now than I've ever cared before. My father-in-law was a birder, actually. He left a book at our house called Birds of Western United States. Well, and I would occasionally look at it.
Every year we age, we get more into birds. And by the time you're about 85, you're just full into them and you don't know what happened.
Right. I think you're right. You age into birdism or birderism.
Yeah.
Wow. Because it's the same, I think, with flowers, where you start to really appreciate colors and you really appreciate just sort of the small things, especially if you're retired and stoned. You're just like, oh, gorgeous. And you're like, yeah.
I notice that. I don't know if it means that our lives are getting more boring or that we're able to appreciate life more. I'm not sure which. But could I be, will. Yeah, yeah, both. I will say, I have noticed going to Central Park to watch birds. Central Park is fun because it's a giant park in New York City, which I didn't need to just explain.
Oh, no. There was just an episode about that. I think Sarah Benincasa did an episode about how much she loved Central Park and the guy who designed it.
Yeah, so. It's an incredible park. It's bigger than anyone imagines. It's just huge. And that's part of the things that got me into bird watching is it actually is one of the best birding hotspots in the entire world because of all the city.
Yeah.
When birds migrate through, they have to find something.
Right.
And so it actually is it's like a funnel that funnels all the birds into
right,
one.
It's the largest place for a bunch of migrating birds to hang out while they rest, get some water.
And there's a lot of food and water. And then also New York City has the most bird watchers because it's a giant population. So you've got this incredible funneling of bird watchers and birds into one little area.
Right.
Called the Ramble. And you just go there and you can see 100 birders and 1,000 birds, and it's wild.
Is the ramble the part of Central Park that's a sort of a big field where the birds end up chilling?
The Ramble is a specific bird sanctuary that's kind of hidden away in the very middle of the park, right next to Belvedere Castle and Turtle Pond.
Okay.
And it's kind of hard to find, but it's just a secluded woods. And you go in there and it's just all of a sudden you see all these birds you'd never see anywhere else. They love the Ramble.
Trying to find anything twice I have a terrible sense of direction, just so you know. I get lost in New York on the grid streets.
Yes.
So, which is insane because you're like, no, they're either going up or down. They're either avenues or streets, should be fine. But nope, 80% of the time I turn the wrong way, which you would think would be 50-50. But
no,
here's
I'm with
the thing,
you there.
I can't seem to find, like, I want to find like Strawberry Field, mm-hmm. or I want to find the Carousel, or I don't ever want to find the zoo, but I consistently find the zoo.
it's where Flacco escaped from.
Right. I think, you know what? Maybe it's like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing where I aim for the zoo and then I will find the improbability drive will kick in and I will find the thing that I'm actually looking for, which would be Turtle Pond or Belmont Castle, which I've never even heard of.
Belvedere Castle. Have you heard of
Belvedere?
The boat? Have you been to the boathouse where they serve food?
No.
Okay. Well, that's basically the entrance to the Ramble. And so I've been going to the Ramble. And by the way, Todd Berry asked me, isn't that a gay meetup spot? And I said, no, it's a bird watching spot. And he said, yeah, but
same.
It's also a gay meetup spot. but apparently it actually is at night. Apparently also that, but in the morning it's bird people.
What do you think of this theory? Back when it was against the law to be a homosexual, you could hide your homosexuality among birders. And people just thought that you were slightly different anyway, because you liked a bird.
It goes to show how secluded that area is.
That too. Now, you just mentioned morning. This is an early part of the day activity?
That's the hardest part for me.
Comic. Yes.
It's like when you have to catch an early flight.
Right.
You just have to like really painfully wake up and really just, you know, get your transportation to the to the park. But you bring your binoculars. But once you get there, I mean, just a beautiful time of day. Sun rising, birds chirping.
That's true. It's gotta be incredibly, even if there's 100 birders there, everybody's probably pretty quiet.
This is also why probably you age into it. The older you get, the earlier you wake up.
Right. You need less sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so what about so there's less sleep, and then you get there. There's 50 to 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's got binoculars.
And I'm, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm glad you mentioned Strawberry Fields, because that's another fun thing is you'll be looking through your binoculars at, you know, a yellow-rumped warbler or some delightful bird. And
yes.
And like the game of telephone, like just instantly word will spread through the park that, you know, there's a, you know, a ferruginous hawk in strawberry fields. And so you'll hear about all the birds where they are throughout the park through word of mouth.
Oh, weird.
What made me think of that is that when you go to Central Park, there seem to be bird people, flower people, tree people, bug people, and photography people, and they all sort of intermingle, but they all have their focus.
Right. And so how many people are there? It just sounds crowded.
It's New York City. It's the most crowded of any park you'll ever go to, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, you're surrounded by people. The birds just flew from tropical islands, and now they've just got 20 people staring at them with cameras.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you also take pictures as well, or are you just there for the experience?
I'm just there to stare at the birds through the binoculars.
So far, not a lot of photos. Just you staring at birds?
Yeah, just me staring at birds. I feel like there's better people. I feel like if I start focusing on taking photographs, I'll just be focused on that.
Right, you might lose the actual experience of seeing a really cool bird.
Yeah.
Do you count how many birds you've seen? Do you have like one of those books?
I'm glad you asked.
That's what I'm here for.
So another thing that got me interested is apparently there's about 11,000 total bird species in the world.
Oh.
And about 700 or 800 live in North America. So a very small percentage.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people keep their life list, it's called, of all the birds they've seen. And so there's a website called ebird.org where you can enter in the birds that you saw.
Okay.
And it keeps track of how many bird species you're at. So anytime I go bird watching, I'll enter in my little bird results into ebird.org. And it also helps the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, who's tracking bird migrations.
Okay. Yeah, and, I suppose.
So I have a tiny life list of 225 birds.
That feels like a lot of birds to have identified and seen what kind and to know what kind of bird that is. That seems like here's how many birds I could identify. A robin.
Yeah, good one.
A cardinal.
Nice. Gorgeous.
The robin is, of course, the state bird of Wisconsin. The cardinal, mm-hmm. the state bird of Illinois.
Yeah.
A hummingbird, because they're super unique and they're right around here. I'll see him here in Los Angeles.
But which kind of hummingbird?
Oh, are there different kinds of robins and cardinals?
So, yeah, no, robin and cardinal, you nailed it. That's the species.
Okay.
But there are a gazillion different hummingbirds.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Right. No. That's so all I could do was point and go bird for the most part. Look, bird. That one has a blue feather or a wing or something.
Yeah.
Some LA's of them are pointier. Yeah.
LA's got, I mean, California has more birds species than New York. So you got a lot to work with over there.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder if Griffith Park, which is also a very large park, mm-hmm. But it butts up against some caves and also, you guys, a zoo. Always a zoo in the big city park. And mm-hmm. then there's caves, and then there's there's also tennis courts, you guys. Never forget.
So I went to Griffith Park last time I was there, saw my first ever acorn woodpecker. You got acorn woodpeckers out west.
Oh, really? An acorn woodpecker. So how many, are there many different kinds of woodpeckers?
I bet.
Right. Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
There's a red belly, redhead. You got the yellow bellied sapsucker, northern flicker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the northern flicker.
You got the downy woodpecker, unfortunately named hairy woodpecker.
There you go. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. So let's go. So you've seen 200 odd birds in your life. So what's the first time you go to Central Park? Do you go with someone? Is there, have you met a friend?
Yeah, I, this was the other thing that got me into it, is I looked up birding guided tours in Central Park. And the first one I found was Birding Bob gives tours on weekends at 7 and 9 a.m. And you meet at the boathouse 7 and 9 a.m. And it's a little bit, it's a little bit under the table, because you're not, I guess you're not technically allowed to give unsanctioned tours in Central Park. So you got to you got to show up with cash, but it's not like he's demanding of the cash. It's more like donation.
Right, right. And what is the recommended donation for Bob the Birder?
$10.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Great deal. And I mean, of all the...
A really great deal.
Of all the things to do in New York, you got a two-hour bird walk for $10?
Yeah, and it's a, and it is, and it's that. It's a two-hour bird walk. You literally walk around.
You walk around in this big group, and other people walking through Central Park go, look at the bird watchers.
I once did a Segway tour of Washington, D.C., and we were mocked. But I have to say that I enjoyed it anyway, because it was a cool way to kind of see Washington, D.C. You could kind of go around the White House, and you could go around, you know, you could actually make some, get some distance going.
Anytime you're part of one of those nerdy groups, people are always like snickering at you, but the reality is you're the one that's winning.
You win. You win. I went on what I like to call, and it's belittling, and I shouldn't call it this, but an idiot tour of Vietnam and Cambodia. Wow. And yes, and what that means is that, because I don't speak Vietnamese or Cambodian, Andy and I paid, it was like $1,000, included like hotel, for 9 days. Starting in Hanoi and going down to Saigon, and then taking like a Greyhound across to Cambodia, and then 9 days in Cambodia, and then $1,000 a week, something like that, or $1,000. It was like $2,400, whatever. It was very cheap in the long run. We'd saved up. It was more expensive to fly there, and the local tour guide would take us to everything you wanted to see. I don't know what I wanted to see. Yeah. I don't know. Did you ever go to Europe with like a Let's Go? Like that book that people. Have you ever been to Europe?
I've been to, I've been to parts of Europe for sure. Italy,
for
Switzerland.
Stand up or for tourism?
I've been to Scotland and London for stand up. That's it.
Okay. And then you went to Italy,
Italy, for France. Italy, France, and Switzerland for tourism. Yeah.
Okay. And so what, did you do any sort of a tour, or did you use the books, or did you just look at a website, obviously, which is what it would be now?
I think I bought a book and brought it and then didn't use it, you know?
Okay. Do you think you got to see the things you were supposed to see?
With Italy, I think, you know, we just drove through and we looked for places with fun little wine places and fun little bread and cheese places. And we saw the ocean, and we kind of just took it all in without. But to answer your question, just in Florence, or Firenze, as we say.
yes.
I scheduled out a full 2 day of focused sightseeing in Florence, and we hit it hard. That was the only one where we hit all the spots.
And you looked it up and you did it. Cause I didn't have the first time I went, granted, wandering drunk through Europe in 1989. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a book, but I stayed at youth hostels, and every morning I'd wake up and people would be going somewhere. And I was like, where are you guys going? And they're like, well, we're going to go look at the David. And I was like, what's the David? And then I would just follow them and hang out with them. Did that in Greece, did it in Rome, got to see the Vatican. It was great. But I would recommend these tours where you get a local person. It employs someone local. Very nice. But mm-hmm. you're on a bus and you do get a little bit of a hairy eyeball from like cool people who just go and know how to plan their own tours. But with these tours, you could also bail of a day and just go, we're just going to wander by ourselves and not go to the planned fish oil factory, which is what I did. Andy went to the fish oil factory. I had no interest in going to a fish oil factory. He said it was one of the most disgusting things he's ever seen. So there was some draw there. Anyway, but you have traveled internationally to see birds too, right?
So yeah, I was just in Australia and New Zealand doing a tour with Nate Bargatze, and wow, he did schedule a tour guide for almost every day.
Oh, he's not wrong. There you
and,
go.
And so I did do the full tour guiding in Australia recently, but I specifically requested bird watching day, and they found a bird guide outside of Melbourne.
Okay.
And this Australian bird guy showed us 45 different species in one fell swoop.
That added to your life list a lot very quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my life list was like 155 before I went to Australia. It really skyrocketed after Australia.
Oh, that's cool. Did you get to see those tiny penguins on that island?
No, we didn't get to see them.
We, Andy and I went outside. I think it's called Phillip's Island or St. Philip or Lord Philip or Jim Philip. Don't know. But there are, and I've talked about them weirdly enough a couple of times in the last several episodes, because I did a show with Will Anderson about Australian rules football.
Oh, nice.
But they're nesting penguins, but they're miniature. They're very tiny. And you go and you sit in these bleachers and they come in from the sea, walk past you and go nest. And then the bus, you have to take a bus and, you get to see some tiny birds, and you also get to kind of sit in the during sunset and the dark, and you get to see some tiny penguins.
You've done bird watching.
I've done a little bit of. I've looked at a bird, but what kind of birds did you get to see? Was your bird day just in Melbourne? And where else did you go in Australia? And did you get to kind of just see birds?
Well, he took us to the wetlands where there was a lot of water birds. But I'm a big fan of the little birds myself. Little tiny cute little birds. So one of the ones that was exciting for both, and actually got Nate pretty excited. It's the most I've seen Nate excited at a bird, was the superb fairy wren. It's just a cute little snuggly little bird, borb of a bird. The superb fairy wren was very exciting.
Is it colorful or is it just tiny and brown?
Oh yeah, it's super colorful. I'm trying to think how to describe it.
Blue? Does the word blue come into mind?
It's got like a silvery blue head patch and just a big pointy tail.
Okay.
But yeah, a lot of honey eaters. I'd never seen any honey eaters, but a lot of honey eaters in Australia.
Well, that's interesting because I'm sure the bees are irritated.
And the favorite, though, exactly, they're very irritated. The favorite, though, had to be the laughing kookaburra in New Zealand.
Oh, you got a stuffed one. You got a plushy laughing kookaburra.
Laughing kookaburra.
I feel like there were flocks of those in the Whitsundays. Because Andy and I went up to see Great Barrier Reef. He had not seen it, and I had seen it many decades ago, but up in Cairns. But we went to the Whitsundays, and there were flocks of they laughed. The noise they made was that laugh from the Simpsons bully.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, ha ha. And it was amazing and ridiculous.
The kookaburra I saw was near the zoo. They're outside of the zoo, and they were, I guess there's different types of laughing, of different types of kookaburras, but this one would be like, this one did a long, like, type thing that was very fun.
That is very fun. And what a new hobby, learning the noises that birds make.
Oh, yeah. Bird calls. It's a whole nother form of bird watching. The real bird experts will just hear a call and be like, oh, that's a, Yeah, that's an Australian magpie.
Right, right. And then they go and can they, if you hear a bird and you're like, oh, that's that, and you ID that bird, then you know what to look for, kind of, right?
That's been kind of a fun eye-opening part of it is listening to birds more, because you can just hear them throughout the day. You hear birds and I'm like, oh, I never would have thought that that was the robin or that that was the cardinal, but now I recognize what I hear in the background.
Well, that's amazing, quite honestly, because you birds, yeah, they're constantly, you know what they're doing? They're chirping, yes. Joe Zimmerman. And so you're they just like, chirping. What the hell is happening? Like during lockdown, I learned that there was a rooster in our neighborhood. That's what I learned because of the quiet. all of a sudden, rooster. Who's got a rooster? And
that's funny to think that, like, you're like, yeah, COVID hit and we got roosters.
Right. It turns out the roosters were always there. They were in the background, quietly cock-a-doodle doodling. And so do zoo birds count in your life list?
They do not.
They do not.
I meant the kookaburras were wild, but they were near the zoo. If you see a bird at a zoo, it does. I don't think that counts toward your life. You got to see it in the wild.
Okay, that's the jam. Did you get to see any birds in New Zealand?
Did see some New Zealand birds. They got their own bird. Like New Zealand and Australia are two of the biggest bird spots in the world because they've been separated for the rest of the continent's been separated from the rest of the world for so long.
Right.
New Zealand had, I think it had. We saw Willy Wagtails. We saw the old scaly-breasted lorikeet.
Okay. Okay. What does a scaly-breasted lorikeet look like? Does it?
It looks like a parrot that you would see. But let's see. We saw the tui was the big New Zealand bird. The tui is very popular in New Zealand, and they're fun little. They look like they're related to crows, but they're more fun and blue.
Okay. Yeah, it might have been tuis we saw. No, probably not if you're in New Zealand. I've never been to New Zealand, but what is the largest bird you've ever seen?
Oh, definitely was also on that Australian trip. It was called the Brolga, and the bird guide was very proud to show us a Brolga.
Brolga, how do you spell that?
B-R-O-L-G-A. I mean, he took us out to this island and set up his binoculars and just boom, the biggest dinosaur looking thing.
Wow.
That I How could big, have imagined.
Like, was it like literally like 3 to 5 feet tall, or was it taller than 5 feet, or?
I would say.
Could you tell?
I would guess it was 3.5 to 4 feet.
That's a giant bird. That's an incredibly intimidating bird, Joe Zimmerman.
It's crazy how many different shapes and sizes they come in.
It's true. Have you ever thought about going to like to destination birding?
I mean, definitely now that I'm into it, like it makes nature trips. It like adds a treasure hunt to your nature trips.
True. Or any trip. Like, I bet you, like, we went to Angkor Wat, which I've always wanted to go to, which is ruins in Cambodia that were used in Tomb Raider, the video game. Yeah. Angkor Wat wasn't. A different temple was. But they're probably 1,000-year-old, 600 to 1,000-year-old temples. The reason they look more dilapidated than like Roman ruins and Greek Romans ruins is because they are in the jungle. Like there are trees growing through these ruins.
Oh, wow.
And it's really, cool. Really cool looking.
Yeah.
But I would posit that there's probably some amazing birds, Joe Zimmerman.
Yes.
Lurking around a jungle in Cambodia. Yeah. So.
You know what it is? It's exactly like Pokemon Go too.
Oh yeah.
Where you collect your different Pokemons all over the country.
Right, right. Well, that probably Pokemon was probably based on birders, don't you think? Because you got to collect them all.
I can only imagine what birds were lurking near you in Cambodia.
Yeah, right. Because it would be amazing. I didn't see. I know Nate Bargatze, and we went to Iraq together in 2005, 2006, whatever, 2004.
That was right around the time the ivory-billed woodpecker was rediscovered in Arkansas.
Really?
I thought
you were going to say that was right around the time there was some war there, wasn't there? Yes, we were just there performing for the troops.
Did you perform in little tents or big tents?
Little tents. We drove around in MRAPs into forward operating bases and stuff.
Wow,
it was terrifying.
You're braver you're braver than me.
Well, we went with Scott, who went every month for like 3 years. And so he knew everybody. And so I felt safer going with him. We were supposed to fly and we didn't get to fly because it was, there were dust storms. We went in July because that's when you want to go to Iraq, when it's closest to the sun. And
I like that you're like, it'll be safe because we're with Scott.
I'm telling you, Scott went, and I'm spacing Scott's last name. He eventually died, sadly, of alcoholism. Okay. But I believe, and this is just speculation on my part, I believe he went to Iraq every month because you weren't allowed to drink. And so for 2 weeks, every year, every month, he didn't drink.
Wow.
And it didn't matter because the other 2 weeks when he came back, he drank all the booze.
That's quite a way to force yourself away from alcohol is to be at war.
Right. And he also, I think he found soldiers very, very handsome. And it was, I think it was the don't tell time. Like you couldn't be gay, but if nobody asked. And so I think he also got some action.
He's got lots of motives.
He had motives. I believe he had motives. Plus, I think he was an army brat, and so he wanted to give back. And that I probably should have led with that, you guys, instead of making him into a mess of a human being. But here's the thing about Scott. He was alive, and he was a good guy. And so he was a whole person, you guys. Speaking of being a whole person, I'm talking to Joe Zimmerman, who has a new comedy special out called Cult Classic on YouTube. It's family-friendly, you guys. Do you do that on purpose? I only do it when I'm with Brian because there's a 9-year-old staring at me.
Yeah. I think I did it for a while because of being with Brian. And then I did it from being with Nate because he does clean shows. So I mostly just decided I wanted, since most of my material
doesn't have to be dirty. Your stuff is just sort of smart and silly anyway.
So yeah. So I just decided to make the whole special.
Accessible.
Yeah.
There you go. By the way, that doesn't mean it isn't really, really fucking funny. Allow me to swear. I'll swear for you, Joe Zimmerman, and tell you that it's genuinely hilarious.
It's weird that I used to curse way more before comedy.
And, right.
And people think of comedy as so dirty, but the moment you swear on stage, you're labeled as being dirty.
Right. Somebody actually said to me, I didn't know you worked blue at all. And I was like, I have a weird married sex joke. Is that what you're talking about? They're like, no, you swear. And I'm like, oh, I only swear when I don't have the punchlines completely worked out.
Exactly.
That's when I swear. It's because I'm looking for a word and I can't find it and it's frustrating. And so I swear because I am alive. Yeah.
I relate to that.
Did you ever, we had a pet parakeet when I was a kid. Did you ever have birds? Have you ever thought about getting birds as a pet? They're dirty, by the way, and kind of gross.
Well, parakeets are the birds that have taken off around Astoria. So I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I've never had a pet bird.
Do you think you'd want one?
I think I'm more of a dog or a cat person.
Okay. Right. And you live in New York City, so you probably don't have room for like a real pet situation. Though Todd Berry has a cat.
We know that.
We do know that. Yeah. It's weird how I like watching birds, but I wouldn't want a pet. Yeah, pet bird. I feel like people that keep pet birds and bird watchers are two very separate things. It does feel different.
Yeah.
Even though they seem like they should be close, I feel like those people do not associate with each other.
Right. Something like the caged bird sings or something. Like, I think that birders might be slightly judgmental. And I think that people who own birds do it for different reasons. Right. Because birds are super, I mean, they can be very smart, right? Are there mm-hmm. dumb birds? They can all fly. It's amazing.
Well, you know, even the dodo bird, famous for being dumb, recent headline, dodo bird smarter than previously thought. Yeah. The dodo bird was a smart bird. It just lived on an island with no predators, so it was super friendly.
Right. And then the Dutch killed the last one, and then we realized what extinction was.
And the Dutch found them to be delicious and stupid because they kept coming up to them trying to give them hugs.
Yeah.
And the Dutch took advantage of these friendly dodos. What a tragedy.
It was a bit of a tragedy, and they didn't really realize that once they killed the last dodo bird, that they couldn't make more dodo birds. It was the way we found out about extinction, oddly enough.
That was the first known one.
Right. That was the first one that was sort of documented, written about in periodicals, sent back to all the major cities of Europe going, hey, guys, it turns out when you kill the last of a thing, God's not just going to go, poo, there's another one, a couple more. That's why the Ark is such a great story. People love that story. So
That'd be a fun sketch is the guy that literally ate the last dodo bird.
It would be tragic. I'm slightly worried about the triggering that's happening among rangers of the Dork Forest right now. You guys sad? I'm so sorry. Let's change quick topic. You told me that this was a golden age of the renaming of birds. Speaking of things that are kind of sad and kind of weird. Yeah. What's happening?
Well, a very strange thing about getting into birding is birding to me feels like such an innocent, nature-y, safe space.
Right.
And the more I learn, the more there's controversy all throughout. There's all sorts of controversy within birding, different cliques. For example, there's a group that does bird calls to attract birds close to them. And then there's a whole separate group of purists that say that's wrong and bad to do bird calls.
Oh, like you're tricking the birds.
Yes.
You should go find the birds in their natural habitat. How do they feel about tramping down the grasses while they go to find these birds?
Exactly. I mean, but these two segments will really give each other some, I mean, they'll duke it out. They want to see birds, but they want blood from each other. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, all right.
There's many controversies. I joined the Audubon Society only to learn that the Audubon Society was named after John James Audubon, who is a very problematic figure in history.
He's a taxidermist, right?
He was anti-abolitionist.
Oh, you mean just as a person, as a man walking around, he was pro-slavery.
And so, and so they're so now various Audubon societies are changing their names across the country.
Oh, interesting. But
aside from that, as of this year, they decided there's about 10 birds that are named after problematic guys in the 1800s.
Oh, really?
Wilson Snipe, Townsend's. There's the Townsend
Wilson
Warbler.
Snipe.
Swainson Wilson? Hawk.
What's a Wilson Snipe? What kind of bird is it? And who was the guy? You got anything?
Well, McCown. I know that McCown was a Confederate general.
Wait. What bird was that? What bird is that?
McCown's Longspur.
A McCown Longspur. Mm-hmm. Is the bird.
Yeah.
a thick billed long spur, not to be mistaken for the McCowan. Formerly known as McCowan's long spur, yeah, is now called the thick billed long spur.
Yes.
Well, that's a look at the gravitas of this bird. That's a sweet looking bird.
Let me see.
That's here. A good looking bird right there.
Oh yeah. 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 So, and then there was another one. I forget. I think Townsend, one of these guys dug up Native American skulls from graves. And once you do that, that's all people are going to remember about you.
Yeah, except for not when you get a bird named after you, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Name change. I do wish to recognize the thick-billed longspur was named for the McCowan's longspur before a name change to avoid recognizing historical figures with ties to slavery, racism, and colonialism. The uh-huh. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Indigenous people in the Seminole Wars to the thick-billed longspur. The response to growing, they renamed, that's not enough. Why was renamed? Oh, he was a Confederate Army general called John P. McCown.
Yeah.
But why did he get it named after him in the first place? Was he?
I think a lot of these people were the first to quote unquote discover / identify the bird.
Right, sort of Columbus Day kind of thing.
Lewis's Nutcracker, named after Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, C.S.
Well, apparently he's had some problematic stuff with Native Americans.
And as he marched across to the sea, he might have had some problematic issues.
So they decided instead of just changing the 9 racist birds, they were going to have to change all 80 North American birds named after people.
Oh, interesting. Even like someone who is decent. Like, there's a Frederick Douglass bird, but no, he doesn't get that bird.
Even the upstanding people birds are getting the names changed just because they didn't want to have to audit every single human's life.
Oh, right. And the birds, when you think about it, the birds aren't necessarily discovered by those people.
Exactly.
They were just. And didn't James Audubon, wasn't he a big fan of, wasn't he also an artist and a big fan of taxidermy?
I don't know. I just know that there's another bird called the Audubon Shearwater that is no longer going to be called the Audubon Shearwater. But I just always thought of Audubon as this sweet guy that helped birds. And then turns out he's a slave owner.
Right. And it's so funny that people are like, well, if you take down the statues, you're not acknowledging history. And I was like, put them in a museum. And necessarily, because statues are weird anyway. I don't know. I mean, sculptures of people can be very beautiful. Uh-huh. But like, if you ever go to the Natural History Museum in New York City, in Manhattan, there is, I think it's the Natural History. Is that the one that's on the Upper West Side? Okay. So Teddy Roosevelt is on a horse. And if you are on a horse and you are a military person and you saw battle, the horse's legs are raised.
Yeah.
And if you never saw battle, all 4 of the horse's legs are on the ground.
Oh, for every single statue.
Yeah. That was, it's a military horse statue thing. And but for some reason, I think it's, and I believe it to be Teddy Roosevelt, there's 2 black, clearly African ancestored, like it would have been, where was he? Was he in Puerto Rico? Was he in Haiti? Where was the Cuba? Where was the war that he made up so that he could go fight a battle? I forget what his jam was.
All I know about Teddy Roosevelt is he was credited for the quote, comparison is the thief of joy. I don't know much else about
it. That's what you know about Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Teddy Roosevelt. This is a real clock eater, Rangers. People are yelling, Jackie, I know the war that he was in. And I know that you guys know that. The rough Spanish-American War. So, okay. But here's the thing about the Spanish-American War. It was the San Juan Hill, which is in Puerto Rico. There we go.
Nice. So, nice work.
There we go. So, for some reason, you know, because Puerto Rico had a lot of sugar plantations, and the colonialism of Puerto Rico was sugar plantations and slave labor. And so there are two clearly African slaves looking up adoringly on this statue of Teddy Roosevelt in front of the Natural History Museum. And Teddy Roosevelt did a lot of things that were great. Like he was Tammany Hall, and he broke up, he came from privilege, but he helped create the national park system. He broke down a lot of monopolies. He was antitrust, and he was also a guy with an enormous ego and really wanted to be beloved by people who he didn't. And he loved the idea of war. I guess he is the quote that I know of Teddy Roosevelt was that he was walking among the dead at San Juan Hill, talking about how war was so much more fun than hunting.
Are you serious?
So, yes. Which, of course, makes him a psychopath. But there were other things he did that, and here's the great thing about Teddy Roosevelt, dead now. Yeah. So when Bill Cosby dies, I am going to listen to the Noah bit, and I'm going to laugh and laugh and laugh. But until then, we're going to let that go. I'm not going to.
Yeah. And it's probably good they're changing the bird name, Cosby's Nightjar. It's probably good they're changing that one.
This is what happens, Joe Zimmerman, on The Dork Forest. Jackie Cation will weed off on you. And I just refer to myself in the third person. We have about 6 minutes left. If you want people, go to see Cult Classic and see Joe Zimmerman. Nate Bargatze is also very, very funny, but you probably already know that because he's quite popular.
There's about 5 minutes of bird material on Cult Classic.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's kind of exciting.
Very exciting.
Is it stories of seeing birds? Is it opinions about different birds? Like, do you call out dumb looking birds? Are you naming names? What's happening?
One of the bits is about how PETA is changing, trying to change. PETA, we love PETA. I like what they're doing. They're trying to change.
They seem intense to me, but okay.
They're trying to change. I mean, somebody's defending these animals, you know, they sometimes they get a reputation for going a little over the top, but they're fighting their fight. And they want to change any figure of speech with animal violence in it. So they want to change feed two birds. They want to change kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, wow.
And they've suggested we change it to feed two birds with one scone.
Scone. Okay, interesting. Yeah. What about the heart problems when a bird eats a scone? Anybody care about their sugar intake, the diabetic birds?
So, So I sort of point out that most birds are gluten intolerant, so you could, you could feed two birds with one scone and actually kill two birds with one scone. And and so I kind of go down that road with the bit, but I don't get into all the other phrases that PETA wants to change. They want to change beat a dead horse into feed a fed horse.
Oh, interesting.
They want to change take a bull by the horns to take a rose by the thorns.
Wow.
Which doesn't make sense.
Nobody wants to do that.
Nobody taking a bull by the horns, very different than taking a rose by the horns.
Right. And I think they're taking the bull by the horns to brand it, which I would see why PETA would not want that to be.
But if you take a rose by the thorns, you just have a bleeding hand.
Right. You've chosen incorrectly. That's not how you pick up a rose. You got to pick up a rose around the thorn. Think before you pick up a rose, folks.
But I also get into. But another thing I get into is how I learned about the life list with birds and how.
Yeah.
I met a professional bird watcher, and one of the first guys I met, I said that sounds like a fun job, and he told me there's a lot of egos in bird watching.
Interesting.
And that's when he told me about the life list, and guys will brag about how many birds they've identified in their career.
Wow. The weird thing about birders, and there was a book I read it was written before 9/11, and it was given to me by my father-in-law, and it was about a guy who won the national saw the most birds in a year contest.
Oh, nice.
Because that's a real contest. And before 9/11, you could, it must have been written right after 9/11, because it was about how he won before 9/11. And you could just, you would hear on the internet in 2000 or 1999, that an incredibly rare bird was flying around Alaska. Mm-hmm. And he lived in Washington State. And so he was like, he would literally get on an airplane. He'd spend he said he maxed out his credit cards that year.
Wow.
And spent something like $65,000.
Oh my God.
On airfares to win this bird, the most birds of the year. And I wish I could remember the name of the book, because Clyde gave it to me, Andy's dad. And it was fascinating. And it made me respect birders, quite honestly, because the purpose from what I can tell from a bird's eye view. Hey, ooh, does nice. Peter want to get rid of that one?
I think that's peaceful enough.
Right, right. A drone's eye view, less peaceful. Mm. So, but the bird's eye view of birders seems to be, like you said, when you go to, what is it, ebird.com?
Mm-hmm.
ebird.org. You're helping people track the migration of birds, and they don't want to interrupt. They don't want to screw with the birds. They just want to go look at a bird. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, we don't have to talk. It's like sort of going to see a concert. I don't want backstage passes. I just want to see the band, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool that's a real, I think it's a, as far as hobbies go, that involve other species that don't really have a say in it, right? As mm-hmm. opposed to, dog breeding or horseback riding or other animal sports, right? Where I want to swim with dolphins or, those all feel more interactive.
Yeah.
Than birds.
Yeah, it's a little bit, another way to, it's a little bit like hunting, but you don't have to kill it.
Right. Because you can just take a picture and you look at it through the binoculars. People lie? I think I remember people lying about what birds they've seen.
Well, that's the funny thing is, there's no real point of having these contests. There's no real point of being competitive with how many birds you've seen, because anybody could just make up how many birds they've seen.
Right. 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 So. It's like cheating at solitaire. It doesn't really.
Yeah. So there's probably somebody out there that's claiming to have seen 10,700 birds that has really only seen 3,400 birds.
Right. Those bastards.
I would, the other thing I would compare it to, you just reminded me of something with dog breeds is, The one other thing I like about bird watching in Central Park is the thing that I find exciting is we're all familiar with the local birds, right? There's local birds that are here year round. Okay. But what's exciting is in the spring and the fall, waves of different bird species will migrate through and they'll be here for just 3 days, the whole species.
Oh, right.
And so if you hang out in Central Park for all of spring, you'll be like one day, like the first, yellow-throated warbler will arrive. And then the next day there'll be 100 yellow-throated warblers and then 1,000 and then they're all gone.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. it's almost like the spring is what's exciting because they're in full color and they're passing through and you have like 3 or 4 days to see each one. And then they're gone till fall. And it'd be a little bit like, I think it'd be a little bit like if you were a dog person and there were like 8 local dogs.
Yeah.
But then you learn like for 3 days, you could maybe see a dachshund
Right.
And maybe,
right. Just some weird wolfhound was coming through town.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And you just have one chance.
Packs. Yeah, yeah.
One chance a year. So I think that's another amazing. Fun part is the migrating so, aspect.
And the other way is that in autumn, when they're sort of heading back to wherever they're, you know, they migrate in the opposite direction, whatever it is. Right.
Exactly.
And are they different birds or are they the same birds coming back? Playing through.
I believe there's more, I'm spacing, but I believe there's more young birds in the fall. I believe there's more birds that have been.
Oh, right. The baby birds. Yeah.
That are the teenage birds.
Yeah. That have just learned to fly. Yeah.
And the fall is kind of funny because a lot of the birds don't have all their colors. So it's a lot harder to know what you're looking at in the fall.
Oh, right, right.
So really the real experts thrive in the fall.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Joe, it is about an hour, just so you know. It's amazing. We talked about birds for most of this hour. I weeded off a couple of times. That'll happen. I hope you had a good time.
What do you call it? Weeded off?
I weed off. Sort of like, you know how dandelions just sort of, they start one place and then all of a sudden they're like also in other parts of the yard.
Yeah.
Anyway. Rangers, no. You're going to want to go listen and watch. The album comes out next month, but the special's already on YouTube. Nate Bargatze directed it. It's called Cult Classic, Joe Zimmerman. It's at Joe Zimmerman on Instagram. Zimmerman is spelled like you would spell Zimmerman, and Joe is spelled like you would spell Joe.
Exactly.
So these are common names. He has also two other albums that you can listen to probably on all the things.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for doing the show, Joe. This is super fun.
Thank you for having me back. It's an honor.
Yes. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was really fun. I remember Joe Zimmerman. You met him a couple of comic from
I
New York.
So.
Yeah, he's originally from Atlanta. He helped us with Brian Regan that New Year's Eve.
That's right.
Yeah. So
funny guy.
Very funny guy. Has a new special out called Cult Classic that Nate Bargatze, who I went to Iraq with, directed. And he's doing sort of and it's super clean, so it's family friendly. But Joe Zimmerman, of course, he's just not that dirty. He's just not dirty. He's much he's like myself. I'm occasionally dirty, and I swear sometimes when I don't have punchlines. No. I'm pretty. It's when if I'm looking for the punchline, that's when I mostly swear.
Right.
And certainly when I'm recording an album or a special or someone has told me not to swear, that is the attainable goal, my friends.
But you also cover some adult topics even when you don't swear.
I think everybody does.
Yeah,
I think everybody
does. That's
probably
true.
Yeah, just because I think stand-up is an adult sport. But he's very silly and smart, and I like his stand-up a great deal. So, but Joe Zimmerman is a birder, a bird dork, and new to it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So
That's the best time, because when they're new to it, they're very excited about it, right?
Right, and they're not quite as competitive. They're able to remember that book that we read that I can't remember the name of that your dad gave us, where the guy traveled around the country or the world.
Yeah.
Pre 9/11. It was written post 9/11, but he talked about the year he won. I saw the most birds in a year.
There's like some sort of competition to see the most birds.
He goes
the most continents and you travel around and look at and go to all these like heavy bird places so you can see the most birds in a single spot.
It turns out Central Park is one of the best places in the country, if not the best place in the country for migrating birds.
Oh, okay.
And, right. And that's so
I guess that makes sense.
It does make sense. And he said any given morning, especially in spring and fall, you'll show up and there'll be like 100 people there. Birders, photographers,
because,
flower people.
Right. Because New York is a big city with lots and lots of people in it.
Right. So there's at least 100 people any given sunrise who wanna see the birds. And he said the first day, it'll be like 3 days of a migration. The first day, you'll see one. The next day, you'll see hundreds. And the third day, you'll see thousands. And the fourth day, none. Absolutely none.
Right.
Gone.
So if you missed it,
yeah.
If you don't get in on that one of those three days, you've utterly missed it.
Right, until next year. He said there's 11,000 different species of bird in the world.
Okay.
And
that doesn't surprise me.
And 800 or 900 in the United States. And he's seen like 230. And he added like 50 because he went to Australia with Nate Bargatze and opened for him. And he did a birder day outside of Melbourne. But they didn't get to see the tiny penguins. Remember the tiny penguins?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The fairy penguins.
Yeah.
They were just an evening drive out of Melbourne.
Yeah. So,
do they count as birds?
I don't know because they're flightless. He didn't say they weren't birds.
They must.
The funniest thing he said was I said, because I don't know it. I mean, I know what a robin looks like. I know what a cardinal looks like because those are the state birds of Wisconsin and Illinois.
And a bluebird, probably.
And probably a bluebird. And I said, and a hummingbird. And he goes, and he laughed and laughed. And he goes, what kind of hummingbird? And I was like, there's more than one kind of hummingbird. It turns out there is. There's a lot of different kinds of hummingbirds.
It's true.
And so he,
I don't know about a lot, but at least three or four, I think.
Right. He said that they're changing 80 names of birds.
Yes.
Because some of them and Audubon societies around the country are changing their names as well. Because James Audubon was a slave owner. And I knew that I also heard that he was a big taxidermist, which is why I thought they did it initially. And he was like, no. He was a slave owner.
Taxidermy is still okay. Nobody's being canceled for taxidermy.
TikTok. Let me see nobody.
You're right.
It could happen. We don't know. Anyway. So, and I asked him if birds in the zoo counted. And he said, to his knowledge, birds in the zoo do not count as seeing a bird. You got to, some people are purists and they want to see
in the wild.
Yep. Anyway, it was a great episode.
That's awesome. That sounds great. It sounds like he's having a great deal of fun.
Yeah, he really is. And that's one of the things I like about Joe Zimmerman as well. So go to, it's a YouTube. It's out right now. It's free. Ooh, it's called Cult Classic. And he's going to have an album of the same name out January of 24. So.
All right.
And I love you. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?